This podcast represents the opinions of Whiskey Wheels Wounds and guests to the show. The content here is for informational use only and should not be taken as medical advice. Consult your healthcare professional for medical questions. Views and opinions expressed are our own or guests and do not represent any organization we are a member of. No guarantee is given regarding the accuracy of any statement or opinion made. This podcast contains explicit language and mature content. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome to Whiskey, Wheels, and Wounds. I'm Sean Neighbor, 9-year United States Air Force vet.
And I am Steve Vickers, 22-year U.S. Army veteran.
I'm good.
I'm good.
Let's ride.
Okay, boys, time for the show.
So this week's episode, we got a special guest. It's Gary All Out Haynes. He's a chapter brother with us in the combat vets. Gary was just over 9-year veteran of the United States Army, and we're bringing him in today. We're going to talk a little bit about that pew-pew life. We're going to talk some guns and some outdoor sports and, you know, how that fits in with Gary's mental health and the way he gets through the day. Well, welcome, Gary.
Thank you very much. Greatly appreciate y'all having me here.
Yeah, and as always, just to reiterate, we're not talking about guns in a political manner, right? It does not matter to us what your political affiliation is or political stance on guns. Most veterans have dealt with guns in their career and continue to use guns for recreation. So we will not get into the morality of why guns are good or why guns are bad, but thanks Gary for coming on. We appreciate you.
Oh, not a problem, anytime.
So what got you started with guns?
Well, always had a love for them on the farm, had to do pest management, woodchuck hunt, stuff like that. During my tenure in Europe, I went ahead and went down to the local rod and gun club, which would be equivalent to Cabela's,
right?
You know, where soldiers can go buy firearms and that, and they had a IPSEC pistol match, International Practical Pistol Shooting Association, and these guys are running around shooting terrorists, not shooting the hostages, and sat back there and like, whoa, this shit looks fun. Started talking to him. Guy Zane Johnson was a U.S. civilian over in Heidelberg, Germany. And he went ahead and built my race 1911 45 for me. But he told me, he said, it's going to get expensive.
Right.
So that got me into reloading. And at that time, I shot about 5,000 rounds a month. I'd go to LARA Canadian Air Base. We went all over shooting different matches. And did that, and then got into the defensive pistol where you go through with your weapon concealed.
Mm-hmm.
And just, I found out that when you try to focus and do precision shots, you have to focus and channel all your breathing. You know, it comes. Anyone can shoot a target at 10 yards with a shotgun. Not hard. Aim, points, pull the trigger. But when you start doing long shooting, out past 300 yards, bullet drift starts taking effect, right, and thermals and wind and, you know, some of them guys, they got the stuff down pat. So one old timer works at a chainsaw shop, and he's one of these 1 mile guys that'll shoot the bullet and like 30 seconds later you hear the tink.
Yeah.
No, that's I don't.
So So for you, what started out as a childhood connection to guns turned into like a competition sport that engaged all of your faculties.
Yes, and especially with being in the military at that time. You know, my era, I'm a 1911 baby. Mm-hmm. Y'all are the pray and spray kids. Mm-hmm. We give you 17 rounds and hope you can hit one target one time. They gave us 7 rounds and we hit 8 targets because you take the gun and throw it when it was empty and knock somebody out. But, it just focused all my training to hit that one spot. And mm-hmm. when you can, you know, like I've told my buddy before, it ain't showing off if you can back it up.
Right.
So you got out what year?
92.
So it's been 30 years. How has Gary progressed from pistol competitions when he was in the military to where he's at now? Are you still participating in competitions?
I have not shot a competition in years. I am still an active member, which I pay dues just to keep my low number. I have I'm in the alpha, like A22,000, and I don't know how many hundreds of thousand, and they're on the letter W probably by now, or double A. But it was always just to go ahead, and yes, it's fun to do. You know, it's at Hogan's Alley. You're running around. Now I'm doing the same thing. I might shoot 10, 15 rounds out the back porch at the steel target. Most all my guns now have scopes. Of course, the eyes are getting worse, you know. But it amazes me when at, say, 75 yards, you grab a rifle with iron sights and tag a target, and you actually hit where you were aiming, like, oh, shit. And that was with iron sights.
I still got it.
That's exactly right. You know,
so now it's less of a competition and more of just a leisure activity, way to pass the time, way to keep your brain engaged, way to keep your skills honed.
When I start freaking out or my thoughts start bouncing, I'll go ahead and I'd probably shoot 10, 15 rounds a day off the back porch. Because to get everything back focused is to take another crack at the target. You know, start focusing. I don't want 31 jobs half-assed done. I want to do one job, get it completely done, and then go on to the next. And I find when I start spacing out, if I recenter myself and go out and pop a couple shots off of, you know, at the steel target, center mass, okay. I want two good shots, center mass. I'm focusing now, and I will not stop until I get what I want.
Right.
Because if not, I'm doing a half-assed job.
Right.
And, you know, I try to focus. Like most vets, my mind bounces, or at least I do. I'll walk into the bedroom, put laundry away, and come back out with laundry in my hand. Like, what the hell?
Right.
So, you ride.
I've been on a motorcycle, years.
So, you started out with sport bikes?
My first bike was a Kawasaki 440 LTD.
Oh,
now, boy, I thought I had a leather jacket. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, God help me. I thought I was Fonzie, dude. Motorcycle out there riding. No, it wasn't a Harley. I think it cost me $500. But, yeah, I rode that bike everywhere, and I'll never forget going into Cleveland. on that bike, and I was doing 85 miles an hour, and people are just passing me left and right. I was like, holy goddamn shit, these people are, you know, I'm a country boy. I ain't never been, my first trip to Cleveland was to go to the MEP station to enlist, to get on an airplane, leave.
It was my first trip to Cleveland, too. Don't feel bad.
My first trip on an airplane, I was on the wing looking out there, waiting for a monster to jump on it. And
yep. I was, my first trip to Cleveland was MEPS. My first time on an airplane was to San Antonio, Texas for basic training.
Fort Jackson, South Carolina.
Relaxin' Jackson.
Yep.
Which is funny because my first time on an airplane was after MEPS as well.
And, you know, I mean, my thing is growing up back in the 70s, I was born in 65, so middle of the 70s, we did not go out to eat. I mean, McDonald's and Burger King are a food group now. You didn't get McDonald's or Burger King. That was something super special or on a family vacation. It was mashed potatoes and whatever mom made for dinner, and that's what you got. If you didn't like it, he'd be there tomorrow.
So we got Fonzie Gary rolling into Cleveland on his little 440 LTD. So what was the transition from that to?
I went ahead and jumped into the military, like most people. Got, you know, had a motorcycle endorsement. Couldn't afford a motorcycle because I was a private E-nothing. Fort Riley, Kansas, first duty station, and I had a buddy that had a FJ-600, Ralph Fortuno from New York City. And he was going out on a date, and he didn't own a car. He just had a bike. So we were talking, and I let him use my car. He seen that, you know, I showed him I had a motorcycle license, so he let me take his bike home for the weekend, and he used my car for the weekend, and damn, that thing was fast. And then my neighbor had a turbo Kawasaki 750 GPZ, and he just came from Germany. That goddamn bike, that was fast. That was quick. That was fast. That little turbo on there. Yeah. I bought in Germany a Honda Shadow, rotated back home, had the Honda Shadow. I was working out at Ford plant, out of the military, and a 17-year-old kid ran me over. On scene, amputation of the right leg, which means the only thing holding my right leg together was the back calf muscle. Other than that, it was severed. Years of therapy, surgeries, learning how to walk again. And I thought, you know something? It wasn't my fault. I did nothing wrong. And my buddy still rode. My buddy would ride his. He had a Honda Magnum. He'd ride it over, and he's like, man, you got to take my bike out. Got to take my bike out. So he came over to visit me. I go and get on Mike's Honda. Mike goes, go around the trailer park. So I went around the loop. Mike had a zip tie, zip tied my right leg on there with the cast and said, okay, I'll be back here in a couple hours. And he left. Now I'm stuck on a bike.
Don't want to ride around the trailer court for 2 hours.
I just want to go lay down, but I can't. There's no way other than falling on the ground, but my leg is physically zip tied on the, they had mid controls, which were like forward controls, and came back. And then I thought, okay, I got to tell my mom I want to get another motorcycle. How in the hell am I going to do this? I just told mom, I said, look, he hit me. I wasn't goofing off. I mean, I've known people to go down pulling wheelies down I-90 and, you know, my thing is they get hurt. Okay, you're a dumbass. Had you had that bike on two wheels instead of one, you may not have went down. Now, I think it's cool. I like watching them. I've tried to pull one wheelie in my life and lost the bike. And my theory is now if you see me pull a wheelie, get a picture because it was a pure accident.
Oh, that's my wife. Why my wife has her road name.
Yeah. I just, you know, so, I mean, I got back up on the bike and just thinking, you know, I didn't do nothing wrong. It's kind of, and the way I tell people is we've all been in a bad relationship. But it don't stop you from not dating or not stop you from going out again. I get enjoyment out of being on the bike. You know, I've done my sport bike. I've done the sport cruiser. I've had the fastest bikes and the quickest bikes available and then tried to make them quicker and faster. And then I got a Harley and I decided, well, I want ABS. GPS and a radio. I don't care. I got cruise control. I'm good to go. I just sit in the back, got my radio going, and I don't want a super loud bike because I want to hear my radio.
Or you can be like Steve and Duke, and you can just, you know, make your radio so loud that it's louder than everybody else's bike.
Hey, you know, you taking requests when you do that? I mean, hey, I'll turn my radio off and save the juice. And
So Gary's made the transition from a 440 LTD all the way up to your Harley now, and you've rode all different types of bikes and all different types of styles. What's the common thread between all of them? What do the two wheels that Gary's been on all these years do for the space between his ears?
Now a word from our sponsor, Ohio Cigar Mafia. Are you in the state of Ohio and a cigar enthusiast? Join the ranks of over 200 members who enjoy a good stick paired with a sip of their favorite spirit as they raise money for veterans. Ohio Cigar Mafia is a 501c3 who supports the Southeastern Guide Dogs. They allow veterans to witness a brighter future through the eyes of a service dog. Thank you, Ohio Cigar Mafia, for your support.
It gives me that freedom. You know, I've seen a post and somebody said, we ride because our brothers can't. That freedom that I get when you get on that bike, it's your thoughts. I guess I kind of leave my body because I can see myself on the bike, but it's that enjoyment of going down a slide if you were a kid. It's that fun just to have the wind in your face. And, you know, the greatest thing is you're out there with your brothers and sisters that as bikers, we all crave that club, that common thread.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So, you know, we go ahead and get out there, have fun. Now, whether it's the sport bike guys or the Harley guys, whatever, but, you know, it's like a motorcycle club. It's your family. So I've always said what we do during the summer will carry us through the winter.
Right.
And what I mean by that comment is, you know, I hate hearing about the club brothers going down to Jacksonville, Florida, or going up to regionals because I wanted to be on that ride. You know, you hear and you live through them, and the shit we do during the summer is what we talk about during the winter. Nobody talks about that great day. 78 degrees, no wind, perfect. No, no, no. But let's talk about embracing the suck.
Yeah.
You know, going across the Mackinac Island Bridge. I've heard, you know, Steve and Bobby talk about it, that, you know, they had their bikes on a full tilt lean. It was blowing, you know, 131 miles an hour, hurricane forced winds, 42 inches of snow.
Oh, it uphill, was terrible. Uphill both ways.
We had duct tape. We had duct tape for boots on that day.
There you go. You know, but that's what gets you through the wintertime. And these people, I guess I don't understand. Most clubs, and ours included, we never, ever go out and recruit people. People come to us. We don't go to them.
Right.
So you go ahead and, like in an MC club, you'll probate. Well, here there is no probation.
Your DD-214 is your ticket in the door.
There you go. And I don't understand why people want to join a club, but then don't ever come around said club. It just don't make sense to me. If I'm going to do work to join something, I want to get the full effect out of it. You know, it no different than buying that shotgun. You know, you can go out and blast a target 2 feet away. That's what's that? That's nothing. You know, these guys own these bikes, but they don't ever participate into the camaraderie. It's that. As quoting a gentleman I know by the name of Hellhound, it's that strategic five that, you know, it's some grunts up there. You know, quarterback can call the plays in the world, but if your front line ain't there, you ain't going nowhere.
We had an episode where we talked about, you know, it was our self-isolation episode, and we talked about how we've learned to in Steve's case, he's learned. And for me, I'm learning how to navigate, October to April, as far as mental health's concerned, when I'm not on two wheels. When you can't ride during the winter, does your love affair of guns help you through in between your riding time? Like, is that something that you augment your riding time with to help your mental health?
I would say that would be deer hunting in general, because during that time frame, October to February, it's archery season. So yeah, you can go out there and hunt, or go out there and practice more gun. You know, thing with guns is, you know, $1 a bullet. So I go out and shoot 15 times. Well, that's $15 times 30 days times 60. Yeah, it gets a little bit expensive.
Arrows are reusable.
There you go. Yeah, I shoot compound bow also. And, you know, I have a love of the outdoors, as most people. What gets me through is sitting back and talking with the people that I've done the rides with. Like, you know, you made the comment about doing 12,000 miles this year.
I did 12 last year. The goal this year is 15.
Okay, so you're at 15,000 where your goal's at. That's going to include all types of weather.
Oh, yeah.
Embrace the suck.
Oh, yeah.
And what we're going to talk about is that monsoon wind that was blowing over the Mackinac Island Bridge. You know, that's where you go ahead and have the good times. You know, my wife, she rides her own, so I don't have to tell her, hey, hold on, because she has a license. She already knows. Now, that's a good and a bad system, because I don't need to be told, hey, it's wet, be careful. I know this shit, okay? I've been, you know.
I've been riding longer than you, woman.
I've been down more than most people been up, you know. I've been ran over twice, once by an F-150, once by a minivan, life flighted both times. Blew back out, lost legs, still ride. My thing is, this is my enjoyment. This is me getting away to go get a fresh breath of air for 30 minutes. That's all I need is a 30-minute ride. Now, it's like doing that 1,000 miles. We got 30 more miles. 30 more miles.
Yep.
And that's all you don't look at it. I always break it down by gas tanks. I got 5 fill-ups.
That's it.
That's it. That's all you got to do. 5 fill-ups. Okay. I mean, I love getting up there and watching everybody go down the road. You know, I can still remember seeing Bobby up in front of me, and we were headed to Sheridan, Wyoming, I think, after it was a nasty downpour and just tired and wet and just wanted to get off the bike. We only got 20 more miles, 20 more miles. And then next thing you know, you're at the hotel.
Yep.
And, you know, the great thing about my wife riding is she knows from a firsthand standpoint of what to expect when the roads are wet. As a rider, you know, as a passenger, I've never been a passenger on a motorcycle, so I don't know what they do back there.
Right.
Do they sit still? Do they help lean? I don't know, and I don't have anything to say. But with Sandy having her own bike and riding her own ride, I know that she knows when the roads are wet to go easy. I ride aggressively. And the reason why I ride aggressive is I've been taken out twice by aggressive drivers. And I'm like, no, I've sat back, done the speed limit. You know, my thing is, if I'm the most aggressive person out there, then I know what to watch for. And that's the way, that's just, I've done it the right way. You know, 70 miles an hour, 60 miles an hour. So I go ahead and I ride aggressive, and me and my wife, we argue about this all the time because she wants to sit back. Like I said, I'm more aggressive, and people, I guess in a bad way, they piss me off because their stupidity. There ain't, I know I'm not trying to not answer the question, but I can just see people beside me as I'm riding my bike. You look over and they got the kneecap on the steering wheel, cigarette in the hand, texting, drinking a cup of coffee, and I'm jealous. And I mean, the one guy actually beat on his damn window because he was stalemating me, and I go speed up, he'd speed up. I'm trying to get around him so I can get around the people in front of me. And this guy is stalemate that I finally beat on the dude's window like, look, go or slow down, whichever one. And Sandy's like, well, that was stupid. All right, well, it wasn't the first time.
Did he slow down or speed up?
Oh, he got the hell out of my way.
Then it wasn't stupid, was it?
Nope. It relieved the tension at the time that I was feeling until I was made aware how unsafe my act was.
Right. And to go back to something you said, you know, me and Sean like to say all the time, like sometimes we ride so much to clear our minds, to help our mental well-being, to spite our bodies. Right. Yeah. So, I mean, We ride for our mental health, not for our physical health.
That's what you told me the very first time I got off the bike with you, and we were like, oh, and you're like, hey, we don't ride to make our bodies feel better. We ride to make our minds feel better.
That's right.
And that quote has stuck with me every time I get off that bike, and I'm like, oh, fuck, I'm stiff.
Yeah.
Look, I've lost a leg on a motorcycle before. Stopped at a stoplight, had to make a left turn, had my feet down, and clicked the little release button, made my left, and the leg stayed right there at the intersection. So I pulled over to the side of the road.
I thought you were going to tell the story of you actually losing your leg. I'm like, hey, we already covered that.
No, I actually lost.
You lost it twice.
I lost. Look, I had a guy grab my leg and go, hey, are you missing this? And I had to tell him, yes, I need your help. And the guy said, what can I help you with? I said, you got to put the kickstand down. I could not put the kickstand down on my bike. I had it leaning on the left side. And then it's like, you look at it because you think, maybe I'm fast enough. And I could only see that going one way bad.
Yeah.
And the guy's like, you know, when you watch somebody walk up with your leg, first of all, it's disbelief. Kind of like the other day on the roof when the mailman came to help me. I'm stuck on the roof. The ladder and the leg are down there on the ground. It is what it is. It's an adventure. There's something. It ain't no different than having a leg bungee cord on the back of my bike and people go by me like, what the hell is that? And I tell everybody, well, you always take a spare with you.
Right. I mean, I watched a reel yesterday, day before, of two men were mountain biking. They were racing. One guy, he falls, and another guy is coming by him, sees the man down. He stops. Are you okay? And the way the guy's left leg from the knee down was contorted. He says, yeah, I'll be okay. And the guy's like, oh my God. Right. Let me pull you off the trail. Cause there's other bikers coming. He's like, let me call somebody for you. And the guy sitting on the ground is like, just give me 2 minutes. And he pulls his pants down and his prosthetic came off. He's like, oh man. He's like, let me just put my leg back on and we're good.
He's like, motherfucker.
Hey, I've been in that situation before.
And, it made me think of
more than once riding a motorcycle and have to drop the pants, get the leg off because you sweat. And basically what keeps my right leg on is I have a scuba diving suit that is goes over my stump. It's like a thimble, but when you sweat, your sweat stays inside that scuba diving suit. So now when you walk, as I'm walking, I can feel my right leg dropping a couple inches, and then you take that step, and then you get the fart sound that because it's just jamming in there. So what do you got to do? You have to sit your ass on the curb or on the side of your motorcycle, drop your pants, pull your knee, undo your leg, pull your neoprene off,
right.
Go ahead and dry everything up, put it all back on, put a stump sock over your neoprene because now after using my leg actually starts getting smaller because of, the blood flow in the morning, blah, blah, blah. You know, strap it up, mount it up, and let's go.
I could just hear Gary running like that, and all you hear is fat, 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 fat.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And you know, it's bad when the grandpa, you're farting again. No, honey, I'm Papa, dry your leg off. Let's go. You know, I got my kids. My kids know how to treat it, and nothing like hearing the five-year-old saying, Papa, I'm hungry. Put your leg on. Let's go. I want to eat.
Well, and I think it's a testament to military humor, right? Or, our dark sense of humor at my wedding reception when Sandy, we were doing the doing the scavenger hunt.
Yes.
And the scavenger hunt was bring somebody's shoe, and Sandy ran to Gary and brought his whole leg up, and the non-military, people that know you or know us per se, they were a bit taken back that your wife is running through this reception hall with your leg.
Is Novo okay?
My favorite Gary Legg story is what you did to Jay down in Kentucky.
Most certainly.
Oh, motherfucker.
Most certainly.
Well, you know, most people, when they see my leg, they got questions. Yeah. Kids are the best because kids will look, oh, robot leg.
That's exactly what Jay said.
I want a robot leg. Is he all robot?
Jay's like, Dad, he's a robot. Right.
But when you took the robot leg off.
And you hit him with the moose.
And you hit him.
Once you go moose, baby, you can't get away from that.
You hit him with the moose knuckle. You ruined him.
That fucked him up. He was like, what? Dad!
Oh, I love Jay to death. He is awesome.
Oh, no. So the other night we're over here. Right? The other night we're over here and he likes to watch movies in there on the big screen.
Okay.
In the theater. So he brought some movies over. Well, apparently he was trying to leave the house with 8 movies the other night for them to come over here. And
told him, I said, he's like, I got my movies. So I was like, he's like, I got 8. I said, bro, I said, I don't think you're going to be able to watch 8 movies in a couple hours. How about you take like 4? He said, I got 4. I said, you just said you had 8. He goes, I grouped them.
Right. So he comes over, right?
Only take one gun. I only got one. No, ain't what you said. I grouped them.
So he comes over, and I'm like, so we were sitting here talking, playing cards, and I'm like, man, I have a DVD book that I took on all my deployments. I've watched all these movies, so many times. I'm like, he would appreciate these, right? Because he watches movies religiously. So I'm like, I'm going to give him this DVD book. So I go in there and I'm like, hey, Jay, I want you to have this DVD book. He's like, oh, okay. Thank you. And then I come out here. We're doing some other stuff. And Sean goes in.
Was there porn in there?
No. Sean goes into the bathroom and comes out. And he's like, hey, Jay, get your stuff. We're about to go. And he's like, oh, you got, Steve gave you some DVDs, huh? He's like, yeah, they all suck. And he's like, what do you mean? There's some good movies in there. And he's like, no, they all suck.
He goes, they all suck. I only watch good ones.
Right? So then he comes out here and, I'm behind the bar and I'm not pervy to none of that going on in there. And he comes out and he's like, Steve, thank you, but these suck. And then, Brandy's trying to smooth it out for him. Like, well, they don't suck. Yeah, they suck.
Just, my mom always said, out of the mouth of babes comes the truth.
Well, what it is Jay likes to have every movie in a case.
Okay.
So when he got all those movies, none of them were in a case. So in his mind, they sucked. They weren't good ones.
Right.
So once we got that hammered out, I'm like, is the reason they suck is because they're not in a case? Yeah, that's why they suck. Okay, we're good. We got that.
Right. So, yeah, so.
But that's the awesome thing, and that's talking about club life and the different clubs. This is my fourth?
We're not a club. We're an association.
Yeah, we're an association. Thank you for that correction.
Circle R, baby, circle R.
Yeah, because I done would have cut patches off and kicked people out by now.
Right.
Or thrown them out. Yeah, that's pretty much the difference.
But I know where you're going. The especially in our group, the family atmosphere how the kids are comfortable around everybody. And
Oh my God.
And everybody kind of looks at them as their own kids and making sure they're taken care of and stuff. So
yes, and that's the, whether it's Jay or whether it's Chrissy's daughter, and I don't know any of their names or any of the kids, but we're always going to provide for one another.
Mm-hmm.
I'd jump on a grenade right now for either one of you guys or for any of the guys in the chapter. Let me reiterate that for my brothers that I call my brothers, not my associates, I would jump on a grenade. Right. Now, the associates, I will throw somebody on that grenade for you.
I dove on a grenade yesterday for Chrissy.
Thank you.
Yeah, working on that damn car.
But it's that family atmosphere, and that's what we kind of got back to when we were talking. The motorcycle clubs were started World War II.
So I listened to a podcast and on a Facebook page. It's called Four for the Road, and they talk a lot about motorcycle history and club history. And I've learned so much from the years of research that they've done, you know, when clubs came around and all that stuff. And it's crazy how, you know, prior to World War II, they were mainly clubs devoted to racing. And then after World War II, when the GIs came home and there were all those surplus of Harleys, they you know, think about it, in 1945, 46, those guys were looking for the exact same thing that we're looking for in 2023.
Yeah.
You know, it's a testament to the effect that what motorcycles and riding have in the environment that it breeds for veterans to be able to come together, have that small unit camaraderie. And you know, fucking 80 years later, we're all still looking for the same fucking thing.
Yeah.
You know, generational, whatever it is, it shows the what we've been saying all along when we say wheels, the impact that motorcycling has, wind therapy has, on the mental well-being, the emotional well-being, and the social well-being of a veteran, regardless of when they served, how they served, or where they served.
Yeah. And that's what I said, like, during Desert Storm.
100-hour war.
Hey, we kicked ass. I don't know what y'all was waiting on 10 goddamn years.
Try 20. And like I said before, you know, the VFWs, they're all, you know, running short. We had to have 20 years of war so that we could, you know, pad the numbers
there
again.
There you go. But, you know, you look for that camaraderie. You know, that's what you want. You want that, you know, you think about all the things veterans as a whole do. You know, some people get out of the military, you know, to hell with it. You know, we all had attitudes at one time. That you want that camaraderie, getting on the bike, look at all the veterans organizations that we support, look at the money that we as veterans have spent, but we always have that one thing that we want to help. Don't care who it is. Somebody needs help, we're there. You know, you put the call out or pop smoke, and you got people coming from everywhere to give you a hand. And that's, I can honestly say, like, Abby's got all these uncles and aunts that are going to be watching her. You know, Nova's got all these uncles and aunts that, you know, these kids ain't going to be able to do nothing. In the Zanesville, Cambridge, Fiesville area, because we're going to be all watching that, we're going to be there for them, and we're there for each other. Now, I understand not everybody gets along. Some friendships are tighter than others, and I understand that, but still that looking out for one another, like me taking mom out somewhere, I know when I take mom, well, there again, mom's been to more national meetings than half of our members. And she's 89 years old.
She goes everywhere.
Well, but there again, mom sees Steve. He's handsome. Okay.
That right there should show you her mental state.
That's dementia right there. Hey, God damn it. Oh, shit.
Wait. Does that mean Chrissy's got dementia, too?
If the shoe fits. But, I mean, it's that brotherhood.
And it's that dark sense of humor again.
That's what we thrive for. The fact that my wife can go UP, and maybe I have me and my wife have a different relationship. I don't know. You know, everybody's relationship is different. But my wife to go to Minnesota or UP in Michigan with these guys, all right, have a great time, bye. I know damn well these guys have got her sick.
Most certainly.
I do not worry not one goddamn bit. Honey, I love you. Give me a call when you get in or send me a text along the way. And there again, we're going to do the same thing at Nationals. You guys will leave here. I'll already be out there. She'll send me, you know, wheels up in 5. I send back XO. Boom. Okay. And then later that day, she'll send me when you guys stop or whatever. And that's fine. I mean, I can sit in the garage and look at my bike and think of every ride I've been on. It's like that horse in the stable. You know, I told Sandy that I was looking at a mountain mule. And she's like, what the hell is a mountain mule? I said, it's a mule that they use out west to ride up in the mountains, and the reason why you have a mule is it's a better ride than a horse. It's more gentle. And Sandy's like, what? I said, well, you know, my neighbor's got a horse. And she's like, what are you doing? I don't know. Just like horses. I like looking at my bike, you know. I got a Triumph Thunderbird with, I think, 2,100 miles on it. Yeah, I've only put 300 miles on it. But I can sit and look at the bike in the garage and think about all the rides. Like, damn, yeah. It's like brushing a horse. You know, you're waxing your motorcycle. You know, there's...
That means you have to clean it.
Yep.
I don't wash mine.
Some people... Hey,
keep,
I don't.
Just keep fucking riding.
That's it. I'm looking at it like cars when they try to take the dents out of Mater, and he's like, no, every one of those dents is a memory.
There you go.
That's how my dirt is. Oh, that dirt I got there, and that dirt I got there.
Hey, I look at it like this. When Harley changes the oil, they can wash it. Because I do not – I've had chrome motorcycles. I've had shiny. I've had darked out. I've had sport bikes where it's nothing but plastic covering up the motor. And when I bought my Yamaha Stratoliner, I was on the forum because a Roadliner by Yamaha is the one without a windshield and without bags. The Stratoliner had a windshield and bags. And I was like, eh. And then they had the blacked out one or the chromed one, and somebody put on this chat group, I go to the car wash, I insert $1, I spray it down, I leave. Zero wiping. And I thought, well, hell, if you got a blacked out bike, shit, spray it down and go.
Yep.
And now my bike's chrome because Harley didn't have the blacked out version. And I will not spend the money to black out my bike. And it's like I told Sandy, yeah, I'd like another bike, but you know, all I can see is my gas tank and my fairing. That's it. I can't see the rest of the bike. Guess what? It's paid for. I don't like having a motorcycle payment in the wintertime. That sucks when you walk by your motorcycle and you still owe on it. And you're like, motherfucking goddamn snow outside.
That's why I pay for my insurance once a year. So
now see, I get criticized for dropping my insurance from November to April. Now, my theory is I can go buy another gun because I just saved over $600 and some.
Yeah, no.
You got to insure two Harleys, three Triumphs, two quads, and one side-by-side, and I stopped my insurance on my Harleys during the winter and just put that storage, I get like almost a $600 credit.
Yeah, I know.
Well, that's another gun.
Yeah. Because if it's fucking mid-December and I want to go for a ride, I'm going to go for a ride.
This fucking guy.
Yeah. Hey, how many?
He spends so much money on stupid shit, but motorcycle insurance is a bridge too far.
Hold on a second. Hold on. We need to make sure that we don't specify what stupid shit he spends money on.
Exactly.
Because we do not want his CPA slash wife, slash to find out any of the stupid shit he may or may not spend money on.
I will not confirm nor deny none of that.
But you will hear is beep, 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 beep. And what that sound would be is the cement truck coming in and putting a brand new cement driveway all the way out from the road. Now, whenever y'all come to visit Sandy and you feel my presence, because I'm up under the goddamn driveway.
you take a metal detector over the driveway and you're like, beep, beep, beep. Oh, that's where Gary's leg's at.
Like, look, she turned off the phone, but she forgot to unhook the leg.
but to go back, I mean, it's a testament to, you backing up what you say, allowing, and I don't mean this in a misogynistic way.
Right.
You allowing Sandy to roll with us because, again, I would never let anything happen to Sandy.
Mm-hmm. Sandy would never let nothing happen to you.
Right, exactly. Most certainly. And Sandy rides as well, probably better than most of us. So
I give her credit on that and her ability. She has, and I ain't saying men are better than women by no means. Am I ever saying that shit? I guess from being in the military from the age of 18 all the way up and then getting civilian jobs. The one thing I am blessed about is in the Army, if you're an E5, Willie's an E5, and I'm an E5, we're all getting paid the same.
Right.
Now, I expect people to do their J-O-B. That's all I expect people to do. But Sandy would never, ever do anything or allow anything to happen to you because of the amount of respect she has for you.
Right.
And I know you as my brother would die before you let something happen to her.
Most certainly.
And we all feel that way. And that's what makes us one step tighter than the guy that shows up at a club meeting, did all this shit to join, and we got to damn near beg him to come to a meeting. I don't understand this. You only get out of things what you put into it,
which it also goes to, like, me and Sean was talking yesterday about the time we were sitting there and I was telling you about me and Chrissy going out to Indian Lake and you said, are you riding? I said, no. I said, I'd love to, but weather's coming in the day of the concert. And I said, but we're going to be there a couple of days. It'd be great to ride out there. You're like, take my trailer.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay. Yeah. And then after that, I was like, hey man, was you serious about me taking your trailer? You're like, well, did I say it? I'm like, well, there's those people out there that, they tell you what they think you want to hear at the time, like, hey, if you need anything, call me. And then you fucking call them and they're like, oh, you need that today, or right? But how you didn't really know me from Adam at the time because I was new. I was new in
Were
the chapter.
Were we at the Bike and Rib Fest?
Bike and Rib Fest, yeah. Okay. And I was new in the chapter, and you're like, hey, take my trailer. And we were talking about that yesterday. It, the same concept. Like, it, you know, it's, I feel the same way. Sean, feel, you know, Sean is, Sean has given my wife grief about this car that he volunteered to repair. And now that the job is
halfway done.
Well, yes. And it's a little more involved than he thought he was going to get into. But that's the thing. But, you know, and I'm like, prior to that, I'm like, hey, let's find someone who does this for a living. Not because I don't think he can do it, because I know how much he has on his plate. And I know he wants to do it because he's a friend, you know what I mean? So it was, that's the thing. That's what I'm trying to get around. It's, you're absolutely right. There's differences. And I think without getting in too much of the chapter T, you know, there's people that don't feel, air quotes, welcomed, right? You know, the cool kid club.
I don't know how people can't be feel welcome at the cool kid club.
Right. But
the cool kid club only has one requirement. Show up.
Show up. Yeah. I mean, but yeah, I mean, but if you show up, you get the same treatment as everybody. You know what I mean?
And my thing is, it takes us 20 minutes before a meeting, 20 minutes after a meeting to say hello and goodbye.
Right.
Now, you want to walk in, sit your ass down, not talk to nobody. People are going to still come up, shake your hand or say hi to you or whatever. And then you just want to run out and leave after the meeting is over. That's on you, but that's what you just got out of it. You just spent half your day with these people that you said you wanted to ride a motorcycle with. And didn't even say hi or, you know, I understand we all get pissed. We all have bad days. We all have good days, you know. But it still breaks down to that thing of being there for one another. I mean, when I told you come get my trailer, I meant it.
You most certainly did.
You
and,
know.
And we got the trailer. And
no it, different it made, when you moved and you called right. And you're like, man, I fucking hit this. Yep. Dude, are you okay? Your truck? Yeah, I don't give two fucks about that trailer. Yeah. They made 1,000 trailers in a day.
Right.
I can go get another. But, you know, first thing he did is sent pictures, got you a part, boom, boom, boom. You need me to come over and help you put it on? Shit, it was already on. Right. Sit here and bullshit with me. But that's the brotherhood, and that's getting to know, you know, who Steve Vickers, a.k.a. Hellhound, is to find out how fast I want to jump on that grenade for this man. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's it. Okay, can I throw a table on the grenade, or do I got to throw another body on top of it? Because right. I can grab a civilian. But that brotherhood and that camaraderie – you don't put yourself out there if you don't meet. Right. I don't, I guess at 57 now, doing this shit for over 30 years in clubs, associations, I don't have the energy anymore to put my friendship out there to people because, like everybody else, I've been burnt. Mm-hmm. Been burnt bad, but my inner circle of friends, you, Handlebars, Bobby, Duke, Gaskin, my circle of friends, Sean, everybody, it starts getting tighter because, okay, I click with Sean, mm-hmm. or I click with Sarge on shooting this. Okay, well, if Sarge comes over and we blow through 200 rounds of 45, that's where me and him are building our friendship. everything's got to be built from the ground up.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have a good foundation, like a relationship, you're not going to have anything worth building. To me, the foundation that I have with 12-6, these are the guys that are going to be at the hospital when I'm in there.
Mm-hmm.
These are the guys that came to visit my mother-in-law in the hospital with the little teddy bear that she still has and a balloon that said, get well better. And it made mom stay, even though mom don't really remember it, you know, because of her dementia. But the guys went ahead and did something for mom to show their concern over her in the hospital. Now, I love my mother-in-law to death, but I know that gave my wife more comfort, and I cannot say thank you to you and Don for showing up there. I believe that was you two guys that came up there. And, you know, this is the family. This is what I'm talking about. And look, I'm no different than anybody else. If I screw up and fuck up and I got to get talked to by the executive office board because something I said wasn't appropriate or something I didn't wasn't appropriate, I'll handle it like a man. You know, if I overstep my bounds, I'm man enough to say, hey, look, I'm sorry. But, you know, like me and you were, me and Steve were talking earlier, I'm still the same guy that you can call me, send me a text, knock on my door like, hey, dude, I didn't appreciate that joke about my motorcycle and you put a tampon on my back tire. Okay, big fucking deal, dude. I'm sorry. I apologize. It was a joke, whatever. Well, yeah, but you said my motorcycle's for a bit. Dude, drop it. You know, I mean, people can't take a joke. I don't know what to say to you.
Going back to you thanking Steve for coming to mom's hospital room, it reminded me of, and I'm paraphrasing because I can't remember the quote exactly, but it was from one of the Batman movies. Where he's like, well, we didn't thank you, and you'll never have to. And that's exactly what it is.
Right.
You don't ever have to thank us. Like, we appreciate the thanks, but you don't ever have to feel obligated to thank us for what we do because it's what we do. We'll do it regardless. I told Steve when I joined, I said, you know, coming from, you know, my dad raised me in a more of an old school motorcyclist upbringing, the word brother is very sacred. And I told Steve when I joined, I said, you know, because I saw a lot of the guys just throwing brother around everybody. And I'm like, that's a word for me to call you that. Like that motherfucker has to be earned. And so I refer to very few guys in the chapter as brother because that's something that's
been beat into you.
With that, but it's sacred, you know, and that's why, you know, when Chrissy was telling me about her daughter's car and how much it was going to cost to fix it, and I looked it up and I'm like, yeah, it's going to be a little bit of a pain in the ass, but she doesn't have that kind of money to drop to get her car fixed, and she needs her car fixed. You know, she got a little baby and stuff like that. That was a no brainer for me. Now, I motherfucked that car like there was no tomorrow last night. I motherfucked the shit out of it. And I told Steve to tell Chrissy she's cutting into my fucking Call of Duty time. But there was no hesitation on my part. You know what I mean? Like that was, if I had the capability to help him by helping her, by helping her daughter, that's a fucking no brainer.
That's family. And that's where it all comes into that family that, you know, you got Steve's back, which you're watching out for Chrissy's daughter through Steve, and we all come together to make this club as great as it is. But the benefit from this club, I never
Association.
Knew. Oh, thank you. Association.
Circle R.
Circle R. The great thing is
we're going to get delisted, demonetized. dethroned, de-verified.
We'll have the very fast-speaking guy at the end that put all the disclaimers.
The views that are expressed on this show are not ours.
If you're suffering from carcinoma from Camp Lejeune water, blah, 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 blah.
This is trademark of Ricky Bobby. Yeah. Number one, you're either first or you're last.
You know, but it's like that clip from the movie where the guy walks in and says, look, I'm going to need your help.
Yeah.
We're going to go beat some people up. Yeah. We're never going to talk about this again. You know, are you with me or are you without me? Whose car are we taking?
Right.
Yeah. Hey, shit. You call me and tell me start digging a hole. Okay.
When we had Sarge on, one of the things we talked about was Joey Diaz has a line. He's a comedian. It's, you don't need 20 friends. You need 3 motherfuckers. That's it. And you can take over a country with 3 motherfuckers. and that's what it is, you know. I know, and that's why I told Steve, if the shoe was on the other foot, I know he would have done the exact same thing. Steve is one of my motherfuckers. And I know that no matter what, I can rely on Steve to be that motherfucker, no questions asked.
And which is funny because in the military, I used to, when I'd stand in front of my platoon, I'm like, now you motherfuckers. And I'm like, I'll preference this by saying I use motherfuckers in the nicest possible sense, but you motherfuckers.
Not to piss me off.
Right.
It is so, a term of endearment. Yeah,
don't be calling EO on me because fuck. Yeah.
And, but that's the thing. You earn the respect. And, you know, I see these people put in the miles and I see the people like you guys do. You know, I've sat on the side of the desk or the table that you're at and some people come in here and they throw 100% in. Some people come in here, they don't throw 100% in. Who gets more out of the club? Self-explanatory. With our club, you're getting mothers, daughters, fathers, brothers. You're getting a mix of everybody that's there that you can count on. And like you say, you earn it. I agree with you 100%. People throw, you said the word brother to you is sacred. I, you know, the word to me that is sacred is when I tell somebody I love them. And I have no issue getting off a telephone and telling one of my club brothers, hey, man, I love you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have an issue with that because I don't know if you're going to get on your bike and ride today.
Right.
Something happens. I'm not going to be sitting there saying, damn, I wish I would have. No, I'm. Life is too short. We know this from being in the military.
Yeah.
Everybody nowadays knows what it's like to be shot at. You're thankful it didn't hit you. Thank goodness. You would have jumped in front of it for anybody else. But it's that person that earns your respect that becomes a part of you. Like you and Steve, you guys probably on the friends and family program because y'all on the phone all day, like with me and Nat. I'll go ahead and call, you know, Handlebars all throughout the day because he's a truck driver.
Mm-hmm.
And I have no problem telling my brother that, hey, man, be safe. Love you.
So to kind of tie all this together, guns, motorcycles, our association, your close-knit friends, like all of that is encompassing for you the wheels part of our whiskey wheels and wounds. All of that goes into how you take care of yourself without having to take in those destructive vices to move forward in life and all that jazz?
The wheels for me would be the therapy part, because the wheels to me help heal my wounds.
Right.
Yep.
That, and you know, we've all, whatever trauma you face is different from you.
Mm-hmm.
But I ride for my brothers that have gone down.
Mm-hmm.
It takes a lot to get back up on a bike after you've been took out once. It takes a lot to get back up on a bike when you've been took out twice. Because my thing is, shit, third time charmer? Well, hell, if I go out doing what I love, I won the fucking game.
Mm-hmm.
My father, God bless his soul, wherever the asshole is, told me he would never leave his property until he was carried out horizontal. My dad's wife was taking him to a doctor's appointment, got him in the car. Dad had a cigarette, beer, got up. Dad had a massive heart attack. She called the squad. He went out horizontal. I ain't upset. Dad won. Right. He got what he wanted. And me, it's no different than somebody getting divorced, getting married again. Okay, well, I went down, I got back on a bike, went down again, got back on another bike. You know, it's like, all right, now let me go into the cruiser mode. You know, once you ride a motorcycle that's got floorboards, you'll never want foot pegs again. Once you ride a motorcycle with cruise control, that's kind of hard to give up.
Yeah, it is.
Especially on some of our long rides that we do. You know, it's nice just to sit there with your hands on the handlebars and
right.
thinking about whatever, however you daydream to get yourself away to help your wounds. And to me, without the wheels part, you're not going to fix the wounds.
And I think it's a building block, right? So guns and motorcycles have been there your whole life. Yes. They were there before your trauma, right?
Correct.
You know, I mean, you know, hell, they probably helped escape some childhood trauma, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, to get on some guns in the backyard, or you know, on the back 40 of the farm, or get on some motorcycles and get away from, you know, life as a youngster, right, on the mm-hmm. farm. So, like, those are building blocks. Those are things that will always be there for you, and they allow you the opportunity to expand out, right? It's a gateway. Right. Gateway leisure activity to everything else. Right. So I say that to say, 2016, I want to say I had a set of golf clubs. My father-in-law was an avid golfer. We would take trips every year to Myrtle Beach, and golf. And, so I bought he gave me a set of golf clubs, and then, you know, I kind of, yeah, okay, I can golf a little bit. So, I then went and invested into a set of golf clubs, and towards the end of, you know, when I started getting, when I got injured and, playing golf after, I got injured in 2010, hurt, right? Physically hurt. And also it was, you know, you want to be good at something. You don't want to do something half-assed, like you said. You want to be good at something. And golf's one of the most frustrating things to be good at, right? Tiger Woods gets frustrated. You know, John Rahm, he just won the Masters. He, you know, like, professionals get frustrated at golf, and they're fucking good at it. It's one of the most difficult things to master or whatever. So, you know, and I kept playing after 2010, and one day in 2016, I fucked around and let my garage door open all night. Part of the brain injury thing, and just absentmindedness left my, and my clubs were stolen. So I was like, well, I could spend $1,000 on getting another set of clubs or more, or why don't I buy a AR platform and take that to the range, and it's less impact on my physical health and it's a better impact on my mental health, because that's something I'm proficient at, right? So that's what I did. I bought a AR platform, a 223, you know, nothing crazy. Mm-hmm. And it just took it to the range and, you know, putting 5 rounds center mass at, you know, 25 yards or whatever, man, does a world, you know what I mean?
Oh,
but,
yeah.
But also when that's when you realize, hey, you got some nerve damage in your right arm and I'm a right-handed shooter. You got some brain issues. You know, my brother-in-law, he had a stroke, right? And he's an avid now. He's an avid, shooter, right? So but with his stroke, he'll just, you know, when I went shooting with him the one time, he just shooting bum, 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 right? No real rhyme or reason, just pointing the gun forward and shooting, pulling the trigger. And then you back the target and he's like, I didn't hit it. I'm like, yeah, because there's a method to this madness, right? And then I'm like, he's like, well, I'm like, where are you aiming? You know, you go through that. Where are you aiming? Well, if you're aiming here and you're not hitting the target, you have to now trick yourself, right? You have to trick your mind into aiming in a different location. So you're hitting where you want to go. You know what I mean?
It's
Kentucky windage without, you know what I mean? Like, it's picking up a rifle that's not zeroed. It's picking or something to the effect. And then we spent the next, you know, 30 minutes in there on saying, well, this is what I do. This is how I trick myself. I know my rounds hit, you know, here. But I also go through the same routine. I start at the bottom of what I'm aiming at. I move right and then move up to what I'm going to shoot. I then natural pause on my breath and then squeeze the trigger.
But see, now you're focusing all that energy into hitting that target.
Right.
And that's nothing else matters.
Right.
The sound of your breath laying down on the stock of the AR.
Right.
You're getting that great sight picture, equal distance. You got your fingertip right on the edge of the trigger like you were taught in basic training. Yep. Now put 5 rounds in that little hole.
Yep.
Put 6 rounds. You know, try to go ahead. If you aim small, you miss small.
Yep.
You know, aim at the guy's button on a shirt. Just don't aim at the whole shirt. Aim for that button.
Right.
Now, can you do it 4 times?
Right. And then once you do that, now, shorten the time it takes you to do that. Right. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like I told my youngest daughter when she was playing softball, don't do something until you get it right. Do something until you can't get it wrong. There's a difference, right?
Yep.
And that's where proficiency comes from. Don't do something until you get it right and then just, you know, sit your bat down or sit your glove down and walk away and be like, hey, I hit a home run. No, where multiple home runs come is when you do something until you can't get it wrong. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Now, even if you don't hit a home run, if your swing is the same every time, right? That's the till I can't get it wrong portion. Your likelihood of hitting a home run goes up.
Elevates.
Right. Goes up substantially. So that's the thing. So with him, I was, you know, it was like, hey, this is what I do with my brain injury and my injuries, you know, in my right arm. This is how I combat that. Right. And then he took that. And now when he goes shooting, he applies those principles. And now it makes it more enjoyable because now I'm not just wasting money sending rounds down range because I like to hear the bang. I'm actually hitting what I'm shooting, you know, hitting what I'm aiming at. So
he has
the tools now.
Well, he has the validation
right
on the target now that he's becoming proficient at what he's doing, as opposed to I don't see anything on the paper. You know, right. It's that frustration with golf.
Right.
You know, you want that validation that you're doing something and you're getting better.
Right.
Because when you get better at it, you're going to want to do it more and it's right. going to provide more enjoyment. And, you know, so, I mean, it's.
And like I said, it leads to, right? I didn't play golf since, I played golf one time since 2016. Or excuse me, twice. I borrowed a set of clubs from my father-in-law and played. And then after that game, I'm like, listen, my body hurts. It hurts. So I didn't play again. And then I played me and CLP went up to Columbus for a Mission 22 event. And we played. And I was like, okay. I need to keep the clubs in the closet, you know? And, but now, you know, I've lost some weight. I've addressed a lot of my physical ailments to help my quality of life. And, you know, last Friday I went out and played a round of golf and it felt pretty good, you know? And that's what I'm saying, you know, we have those core leisure activities that we love to do. And those allow us to A, get us in a better mental space and B, get us in, allow us to transition, expand our horizons, to other things and to, you know, my blessing is my wife likes to do everything I like to do. That's my blessing. So we're not doing things separately a lot. You know what I mean? And so we she enjoys shooting. She enjoys motorcycle rides and all that. So that's the thing where you know, when you can share that with others, and it's not a chore. It's not a chore for her to come do things with me or vice versa. It allows people to enjoy things together.
And that's a lot of it is the enjoyment. Like I said, with my wife riding with Sandy, I got to kick her ass out the house or kick her ass onto a bike, you know. When she was out there in Indianapolis for 3 years, you know, she had her bike out there and I'd drive out there, pick her bike up, bring it back, swap out bikes, get oil changes or tell her, you know, schedule an oil change because you're getting ready to ride out there. And then you guys ride out there, pick her up. Okay.
Yep.
I mean, to me, I love the fact that my wife loves to ride as much as I do. Hard worker, dedicated. Yeah, got to kick her ass out of the house to get her some headspace timing. But there again, there's your wheels.
Right.
And it's a joy when your spouse loves to do what you do. because I don't have to explain to her that, you know, I need a break. I got to get a break, you know. Taking care of mom, yeah, it gets stressful at times, but there again, I look at mom and I think nobody would ever want dementia. I wouldn't wish that on nobody.
Right.
And all mom knows is, you know, we're getting ready to go to Colorado Springs this year. And
with the handsome man.
With the motorcycle people. You know, but yeah, like I say, everybody in this chapter, I think, I don't want to assume, has a great life story and has a love for life. Everybody's seen death, especially being in the military. You know, the ones we've lost, we get out there and we do the memorial rides for them, or we go ahead and help the kids. Like we said, our kids are all of our kids. Well, when you do a teddy bear run or what mm-hmm. have you, you know, some little kid is receiving that gift. I look at life like this. I've been down twice. I've used up a lot of my life as a cat, having right. nine. You know, I carry with me a little medicine bag, and in it I got one of my chapter coins, one of our first ones from the honor flight we did. Mm-hmm. And then there's also a bullet that didn't find its mark with me.
Hell yeah.
That I carry that somebody, well, they lost, you know. But have a joy for life, that life is precious. You're here today, gone tomorrow. Know a gentleman that had a stroke. He's a truck driver. Now he's had open heart surgery. Guess what? He'll never drive a truck again. Can't pass physical.
Right.
You know?
What I tell people is I don't want my headstone to say, here lies Sean. He existed.
Right.
I want to come sliding in sideways, beat the fuck up, worn out, dirty, filthy, the whole nine yards.
20 minutes late.
And then my headstone says, he lived. You know, I want to live. I want to enjoy my life. I don't want to die with a massive bank account. I'm okay with dying being broke if I got to take that money and live with it. And that's been key, is being able to embrace that I'm living now as opposed to just existing.
Yeah. And that's the quote, right? Get busy living or get busy dying.
Well, I heard it like this. In life, you have a day that you started and a day that you ended. What's important is that dash.
Right.
How much information do you want to be contained in that dash? You can have a big bank account. Hell, get 200,000, 300,000. Hell, get $1 million. Put me in your will. Thank you. I'll toast you.
Right.
I'll toast you every time. You know, shit. You give me a bottle of whiskey every time I see that. Here's to you, Steve. That was one of you. But, you know, my thing is enjoy life. I want to do, when I got back up on iron after the first time, and then after the second time, I decided, you know something, I want to do some long trips. And I started doing 4-day weekends, you know, and then after my amputation, I took off for like 45 day. I hate it. Said I just got on my VMAX, and wherever I went, is where I went. I know where Johnson City, Tennessee is. I've been there. Me and Darius Rucker. You know, I mean, yeah, it was a safe haven to find out and get that joy and the sun on your face.
Right.
It's no different than going on your first motorcycle trip and then you pull into that scenic overview that you've passed 1,000 times in a pickup truck in a car, and you just stand there and look at it and you think, wow, I signed up to defend all of this. Mm-hmm. And you look out and there's a place down in Nashville, North Carolina, that I think it's Route 81. They got a scenic overview. And I mean, it's up on top one of the mountain. You just look and then I think, I said I would die to defend all this. And you look how much space is out there.
Yep.
And at times, I guess I just get amazed at what it is and how little I actually did for this country of ours. I mean, you only got to be in... I can't even say be in the military, be a civilian, go to Korea. I bet you're going to be real happy that your ass is in the USA.
Yeah.
You know.
So, Gary, how long after you got out of the military did you start going to the VA?
Oh, Lord. That, like I said, thank God for this chapter. I didn't know. I mean, I got out of the military. We had a little like aid station, Band-Aid station. Uh-huh. I went in. I remember going in there and giving them a copy of my DD form 214 and getting out of there and never using them again. And then I got in my bike accident, the second one, and I had a gabapentin was a drug they put me on and is supposed to eliminate backache
mm-hmm.
or sore muscles or something. But, well, I had to buy it out of pocket and it was like $450 a month. I mean, and my buddy said, well, why don't the VA give that to you? I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, well, go to the VA. Dude, I didn't retire.
Right.
And that's all I knew. I knew if you retired out 20 years or medical, that you got full benefits.
Right.
And then I started to get into it. And it wasn't until I think, well, we bought our house here in 2012. And the chapter got going, I think, about 2016.
Yep, 2016.
And I can remember me and Bobby talking. And I think at that time I was like 20%.
So when was the wreck?
The wreck was in 90. The second time was 29 February 2004.
And then when did you get into the VA system?
Shit. 2010?
Okay.
Yeah, I didn't know anything about it. I mean,
that's what I'm getting at. You're 100% now.
Yes, I am 100% now.
That's what I'm saying. And I say that, I asked that to get to this point where, you know, there's people that may be listening to this podcast thinking their percentage is never coming.
I went ahead and I remember talking to Bobby and me and Left Hook talking, and I didn't know it was a tinnitus. I got disapproved for tinnitus, and I was talking to Bobby, and Bobby's like, well, did you tell him you got to put noise on and all this? I didn't know any of that shit. I break it down to you to know what's ailing me. It's like I just found out what neuropathy is, where right. Your legs go numb. Well, hell, that shit's happened for years. I just figured it's because I'm fat and I'm overweight.
Right.
And, you know, I mean,
right.
I didn't know anything. Everyone was, what percentage are you? Well, hell, you know, I got shrapnel in me. 20%, no big deal. I didn't know about anything else. Right. I was completely... It was a learning curve. And here's the thing. Thank God for my brothers, the ones in the club that had the knowledge and the wisdom and shared it.
Right.
Because now what I try to do is share the knowledge. You know, if there's a veteran out there and you're not in the VA healthcare system, get your DD form 214 and get your ass down there and get into it. You don't know if in a month, 6 months, 8 months, something could happen to you.
Right.
And
that was my point. 13 years between enrolling into the VA system and getting your final percentage, right?
Yes.
So 13 years, that's a haul, right? Now, some of that's self-inflicted, as mm-hmm. you said. Right?
Not knowing where to go to get information to what benefits the VA or Department of Defense right. have available to veterans. I never knew we got medical coverage.
So last episode, we had Sarge on. You know, and Sarge was a VSO for a couple of years. And that was something that we covered right. was where you can go, what to do, and stuff like that. And so, you know, I think what Steve's trying to do is tie in what we talked about with Sarge last time with you're a prime example as to why we wanted to share that episode with everyone.
Right.
Because you spent so many years not knowing, and then you spent 13 years trying to figure it out and get through the system. And, you know, what Sarge talked about last week, and that just that little bit of information he gave can set someone on the right path to where they're not spending decades plus trying to navigate the system and figure it out.
Or moreover, they're not giving up.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, so me and Left Hook is the one that, you know, he wasn't even in the VA healthcare system.
Right.
And, you know, I told Bobby, I said, hey, sign up for it.
Right.
You know, maybe by us signing up, and like I did the Guernsey County one, but that knocked me, that meant I had to go down to Chillicothe Hospital. Mm-hmm. Due to the fact that the VA makes my prosthetic legs, I use Wade Park because they have a level one prosthetic clinic mm-hmm. that if I break my leg, I can get on the phone right now, give them a call up there. They can pull out my mold from the computer on the CAD machine, start making me another leg.
Right.
So by the time I get up there in 2.5 hours, we're pretty much ready to rock and roll. But it's one of them things that if it wasn't for Bobby kind of pushing or us pushing each other.
Right.
And started to find out things. And now, yeah, like I said, I'm 100% now. PNT, permanent total.
Yep, permanent total.
You know, and that's again where you have sacrificed your body.
Right.
At some point during your military career. We all seen the pictures of the soldier with the rucksack, and then it says, no, you're not service-connected for back pain in the VA.
Right.
You know, or you're an engineer and you're grabbing blocks, or you're a mechanic and you got your toolbox and you slip in the mud, which I have seen that happen. And people with that extra 90 pounds on their shoulder, you know, get a back problem from it. But if it wasn't for Left Hook pushing me
right.
and me pushing him, it wouldn't have happened because it was him telling me, you know, you got to explain the tinnitus to the evaluator. And only thing I'm going to say, that evaluator, that ain't your friend.
Right.
That is your ex-wife's attorney. That's who they are. And they're right. there just on fact-finding mission.
Right.
Direct answers. You don't need to get into how your day's going. You have to walk in there at the worst possible day that all the symptoms are kicking your ass. And that's the answers you give.
Oh, I've never heard it described as the ex-wife's attorney.
But that's the point I was trying to make. Like the journey, right, that you took, there's a lot of people out there that, A, don't know. So that's why last episode was so important for us. And also a testimony of someone that didn't know, then got put on to knowing, and then took the journey to now, you know. I'm not saying everybody that's out there that thinks they're 100%, as I said in last episode, you know, the best way to be 100% is to be 100%, right?
You don't ever want to be the first one they see at the ER.
Right. And you know, so I'm not saying you're guaranteed, you wait 13 years, you're guaranteed to be 100%. What I am saying is, whatever you're due, right? If it's 20%, if it's 30%, 90%, 100%, whatever you're due, whatever your ailments, whatever compensation your ailments qualify for, you know, stay in the fight. Stay in the fight. Stay in charge of your healthcare, mm-hmm. and get what is coming to you.
That's what we say every episode. You have to be an active participant in your own.
Most certainly.
I fell at that.
And a lot of guys do.
Well, and here's the thing. I don't know when you honestly talk to a veteran if they will give you the correct answer or not. Now, I'm going to answer for me and only for me. Have I ever thought about suicide? Shit, 340 times every 2 hours. Here's the problem. Tomorrow will be the best day of my life.
Right.
I'm going to be here for tomorrow.
Right.
Because it's going to be the best day of my life. Every veteran, when you're going in, and I stress this to vets, go talk to somebody, make a mental health appointment. Don't try to be He-Man. Don't try, you know. And I'll be the first one to admit, when I sit down with my counselor and they're like, you ever think about suicide, Gary? How you doing? Or you ain't? Yeah, whatever. Let's right. not even talk there. Let's just jump. Because I'm afraid if I tell you my answer, mm-hmm. you're going to get really scared.
Right.
Because y'all remember Sons of Anarchy, right? What was the very last picture you seen on that TV show?
Right. Old Jax with the arms out.
There you go, baby. But, and to me.
Fucking destroyed a perfectly good old bike.
Like, look, dude, you don't want to kill yourself. Don't take the motorcycle with you. Damn right. it. Its bike didn't do nothing to you.
Right.
You know, but I mean, and I will say this. If I opened up. Like most veterans, the dark side humor, it would scare people.
Right. Well,
but you got to heal.
But there's a fine line. There's those out there that just want the percentage.
Oh, yes. I will agree with you.
Because we've had talks with other veterans that they're like, hey, how'd you get 100%? And I'm like, well, first of all, I'm broke as fuck. Right. So, be 100%. Second of all, like, if you're having trouble, well, I'm really having trouble with post-traumatic stress. Okay. So let me give you brochures about this organization I work with. And let me give you brochures about inpatient care, or give me brochures about, you know, whatever. Oh, no. What do you mean? I need to know what to tell the doctor. Well, tell the doctor the fucking truth. If the truth gets you 100%, so be it. If it don't, then what the fuck? Like, if you're fishing for, you know, a percentage, I don't go find someone that's going to help you do that. I mean, there's plenty of Facebook ads of people out there that will help you get a higher percentage. What I'm saying is, if you battle post-traumatic stress, there's places out there you can go to help post-traumatic. We're not in here advocating how to get 100%. We're here saying, if you're 100%, get on a motorcycle And if you, if you're suffering from depression, if you're suffering from anxiety or things of that nature, go do something that you enjoy.
Yes, exactly.
And get out of whatever brain space you're in right now, whatever mental space that has you in a mantic, in your mantic mode, get out of that and go do something.
Here's what I would tell people. Put on a pair of pants, get up, and go ahead and go outside. Ain't nobody gonna get you. You got nothing to worry about.
Right.
Take your ass down to Harley dealership, Yamaha, Kawasaki. I've rode them all. I've owned one Harley in my life.
Right.
And that's the one I got right now. And the only reason why I got that, me and the wife were riding up in Michigan. I believe it's I-75. Headed hauling ass out of Detroit. And bam, everybody come to a dead stop. And I mean right now. And me and Sandy, we both locked them up. She took evasive action and hit the berm. And I went between a minivan and a pickup truck. And I was looking through Sandy through the glass at the minivan, and she's on the other side of the minivan. And I'm like, what the hell just happened? And I mean, it literally scared, asshole puckered. Oh,
right.
Yeah.
Right.
We get off, couple exits up, get gas. And I said, what the hell happened back there? She goes, I don't know. And I mean, you had four lanes come to a complete shutdown right now.
Right.
4 minutes later, road opens up, race said go. Right. All four lanes, like a drag race. And I thought, you know something, that was close. I want to get something with ABS. You know, I don't use, because I'm a right leg amputee,
right,
I cannot use an ankle on the brake pad, so I have to lift my whole prosthetic leg up with my thigh and then get on the brake, but only get it on it as much as I want to without locking up my rear brake.
Right.
And that's when I went to a Harley. And my thing is, go ahead and go to a dealership. And I don't care if it's a dirt bike to get you outside or a side-by-side, gardening. I don't care what it is, but if you're a veteran and you got that anxiety, you got the demons, get outside and do something.
That's right.
Take them to the dance. They're already in your head. They ain't done leave your head.
Right.
Take them on a motorcycle ride with you. See how they like it. Because until you get that healed, you're always going to be broken.
Yeah.
Now, once you go ahead and accept the fact that, all right, I got it. So Sandy knows how to handle me. My club brothers and sisters know how to handle me. It's all about enjoyment. Go out there and do something today to put a smile on your face.
Yeah.
Be honest with your healthcare professional, because if you're not honest, you can't get help.
And that's the important thing. The important thing is you getting help and not fishing for
a rating. Well, I'm going to talk about me.
Because yeah.
Personally.
Right.
I was at 90 by myself.
Right.
I think I was at 93 or 90 something. All right. I went ahead. I wanted to get some things reevaluated.
Right.
Joe Biden signed the PACT Act, which the environmental thing.
Right.
And thank goodness he did do that for us veterans. You know, but then I got dropped down to 70%.
Right.
I'm like, okay, shit, I don't know what the hell's going on. That's why I hire somebody that knows what the hell, knows more than me, you know. If I need a plumber, I don't hire an electrician.
Right.
So I went out and did some research on YouTube, found an attorney group. Here you guys go. We're going to take this. All right, well, I've already tried. I failed. I didn't say the right words, you know, and The attorney group said, well, we're going to take $200 a month. Okay, well, I ain't out nothing because I don't have nothing now.
Right.
Well, they won. So they used whatever big $10 dictionary word
right.
they had to use, and they got it.
Yeah. So, Gary, I appreciate you coming on, man. It's always nice to talk to you. Usually it's when I'm cutting grass. I've cut grass twice this year. You haven't called me, so.
I thought you had people now.
I did have people, but now that, now that I go to the gym you know what I mean?
It looked like you were losing weight.
Right. It's hard to justify walking 5 miles at the gym every morning and not being able to cut grass when I get home. So,
I can justify that shit all day long.
Right.
I can't wait till I get to the point where I can have somebody do my grass. Right. I fucking hate yard work with a passion. Right. Like, it doesn't matter if I'm skinny, I'm fat, fucking broken, not broken. Look, I fucking hate yard
my
work.
My body was made for Antarctica.
Yeah, most certainly.
If it would be negative 20 outside all year long, I would sleep just fine. You know, first thing the wife said this morning when she come upstairs to get coffee was, damn, you had the door wide open? Yeah, sure. I forgot. I don't know.
I live in a neighborhood with a bunch of old people, and old people love to fucking do yard work. Like, I don't get it.
Oh, dude, they do that shit like at 6 o'clock in the morning, right?
If I had it my way, I would fucking concrete my entire property.
Oh, so you want to move out to Arizona,
right?
Where you got rocks?
No, he don't want that heat.
No,
he don't want that heat.
Yeah,
he don't want that.
I know, like I tell my wife and my kids all the time, I keep the house cold because you can layer up.
Yes.
I can't. I can only de-layer to a certain point.
And at some point, you don't want to see all
that. Yeah. You know?
And I know what real fucking heat is. Because until you've been in a port-a-john in Iraq in August, right after they wash that motherfucker, you don't know where hot is.
Yeah. Until you've been over in Saudi Arabia in a four-person latrine, and you got the skill to stroke one out with nobody knowing it.
And on that note, we'll see y'all next week.
I can switch hands and gain a stroke. I got skills.
We encourage your feedback and want to hear your stories. Hit us up, whiskeywillswounds.com. You'll find links to our social media and email. Remember, everyone deployed around the world, those still missing in action and prisoners of war, the homeless veterans in this country, and those veterans lost to suicide each year. Find a reason, not an excuse.
Thank you for listening. See you next time.